the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies. I always say friends and enemies way too close to the end of the intro. It makes editing that part of the audio so goddamn hard. My name is Joey. I'm here as always with my co-host Len. Len, there's two dogs upstairs. I was hoping they'd be tired. I can hear them stomping around. Last week during Two Whites and a Blue, the heat register thing in the ceiling just above the studio lighting fell down. Only had one screw in it. I didn't notice, I guess, and it fell down during the Yeah, it started like slipping out during the recording. The dogs were so rambunctious. Fun having two dogs in the house when I'm with them. Got to tell you, when I'm not, a bit stressful. What's going on over there? How the heck are you? Everything okay?
Yeah, everything is fantastic. I just came back from a good buy. Joy, I went out. I was looking for a Genesis console. I found it. That and 15 games, $100.
Why were you? I mean, I know you're a big retro game guy, obviously NHL 94 podcast, but why the Genesis? Help me understand the thought. Look, there.
I have the 94 game. Like, I had the game without the console, so I got to get that to play the console just because I have to do it. I enjoyed the Genesis and obviously the Super Nintendo as well, but I was just so stoked to find this one because the games alone are worth way more than $100. And the consoles, the original console, there's three different Genesis consoles. I got the more preferred one, the first one, and I'm just stoked, man. I just got that.
Help me remember this. You'll know. I'm having like a fever dream here of a Genesis that had some kind of additional firepower on the top of the unit, right? You could like plug in more RAM or something on the top of the unit. Do I have that right?
Yeah. So you could make it a 32X.
Ah.
So you could plug something into it and it kind of looks like a toilet bowl if you just plug it in. You could also get the CD add-on, the CD, Sega CD, so you could get all three of them to make it, you know, one mega console. But the reality is those two add-ons, they were flops. Just the base console was what people wanted.
That was the predecessor. I mean, that was obviously a huge console, and predecessor is probably cheapening how big Sega Genesis was. But the Sega Saturn came next, I think. I remember renting a Sega Saturn on my birthday one year and renting like NBA Live like 96 or 97. And I was just like blown away by how good the graphics were. Obviously now it would look like it was being played on a, you know, potato, but back in that moment, I was like completely shocked. My friends and I playing on my, you know, probably my 10th or 11th birthday. I'll never forget that. Some of those, remember like going out and renting systems for special events?
I never did that.
Oh,
We all had the systems, all of us had. Oh. I'm a little bit older than you, so everyone has had whatever system we really wanted. And it was the SNES that carried us for a number of years in the 90s. Yeah. That was a killer system.
It was a big one. We all played that. I think the thing that really brought people out of the SNES era was GoldenEye. I still remember seeing GoldenEye for the first time. Again, like mind-numbing. Four people on the screen at once. Instant react. Like, everything was incredible. In retrospect, like, me and my buddies tried to play it at during COVID. It was around the time I tore my Achilles tendon. I don't remember exactly what month, but we went up to Southampton for a buddy's, you know, COVID bachelor party, me and four of my pals. And we like grabbed an N64, grabbed controllers, grabbed games. And the only game you could actually play, I think, and actually enjoy because there's no latency issues, was Super Smash Brothers. Everything else was just dog shit. Bond, tons of latency issues. Perfect Dark, latency issues. Too bad. Smash Brothers is great, though. That game really holds up. And for the record, I will kill anybody in Super Smash Brothers with Pikachu. We could play time. We could play stock. We play items. We can play naked. Doesn't matter to me. You're not going to win. You're not going to win.
Give me some time to try it. I have the Master Thumb. I'm ready to give it a shot, and I'll show you what it's all about. So Boomer says four-player Mario Kart was legit. Yeah. I didn't play much N64. I hated the controller. I was a PS1 guy. So I hated the N64 controller.
Everybody has that problem with the controller, I think. Even N64 apologists.
No, some people like it.
No one likes it. It's okay. It's tolerable. You can learn it. But good controllers have staying power. That controller was one generation and out, and it never came back. Nothing even close to it came back, actually. So then again, that was really the first two-axis controller, right? Before PlayStation figured out the two analog sticks, Nintendo tried to do it with the one joystick in the middle and the C buttons. Remember that? and didn't really work, but I appreciate the effort. That was a little bit of an innovation on their part at the time.
Well, look at the form factor for the PS1 controller. It's carried over for the most part today.
Yeah, it stayed.
It just, that works. And it's like
ergonomic. It feels good.
And yeah, throw me an SNES controller, that dog bone controller. That is another one that's just ergonomic. It works. And there's a reason why a lot of people use that when you're playing on a PC for like retro games. They use the SNES controller. But Joey, enough about video games. I think we got to do some sponsors. We have to talk about them because there's some fantastic.
Yeah. Easy DNS is our flagship sponsor here. Okay. Mark's been with us for a long time. If you need a domain or some DNS or VPS, virtual private servers, maybe you want to run a NASA relay. Maybe you want to run a Bitcoin node. Maybe you want to run a BTC pay server. Maybe you want to pick up UTXO's flag and run a nodeless implementation. You can do all of it. Mark will help you. You can buy a domain with Mark and EasyDNS, or you can bring a domain. You can set up email. You can bring email. All this stuff and more. Plus, Len, you're not going to be taken down. Now, I always mention this, but Mark has helped us a lot with our website. Our website went from nothing to something in the last 6 months, and that was all because of Mark and team over at EasyDNS. Now, if you go there, which I know some of you have already, and you want to start something, use the code CBPmedia, tell Mark we sent you, and you're off and running. It's 50% off your first round of purchases. Plus, Len, we should mention that Mark also helped us with our second sponsor. Who is that?
It's Bull Bitcoin. Love Bull Bitcoin. That's where I buy my Bitcoin. I think a lot of people are buying it as well, given what I see with our referral code. Thank you very much for using that. But yeah, like I said, you could buy your Bitcoin from Bull Bitcoin. You could sell your Bitcoin over there as well. I mean, I'm not sure who'd want to, but looking at the price, $42.5, it's probably maybe something that people want to start selling now. But do what you got to do. Anyways, Bull Bitcoin gives you that option. But in case you want to buy it and it's, you know, a little bit more expensive, the fees, you could also, you get on Lightning instead of just on chain. So by doing that, you could always get your Bitcoin, no matter what are the fees going on today's date. Because you know what? There's some days that those people out there are using BRC20 tokens and shits like that. They're making transactions way more expensive. So Bull has you covered for that. Not just that, you could also pay your bills with Bitcoin through Bull Bitcoin, and you could buy gift cards with your Bitcoin through Bull Bitcoins. There's lots of different options, but the best thing they have, of course, is the KYC free stuff, where you can just go to Canada Post, drop your Canadian dollars, and they're going to take that, load up your Bull Bitcoin account, and from there you could then buy KYC free Bitcoin. Makes sense to do so. We talk about it all the time, the pros for having KYC free Bitcoin.
Yep.
And Bull Bitcoin gives you the cheapest spread on that. So check it out. Easy to do. I also did a video on that if you want to see how it's done, and check it out on our channel.
You'd be crazy not to. Days like today, you know, I think we had a 10% drop on Friday evening. So if you wanted to buy, today would have been a good day to do. I think we're only up 2 or 3%, if that, at this point. It's been slow since the ETF launch. Len, housekeeping here at CBP Media. New episode of Two Whites and a Blue is up. Lots of discussion this week about the clash between the MSN Messenger generation and the Facebook generation. When that came up, we were talking about it. We were maybe the last generation to do both and use them both to try and pick up girls. So that and other quality topics. Last week, I was on Money Talks, which came out Saturday, as the headliner for Mike. That's my third or fourth time on the show, talking about the ETF and trying to speak to an audience of, I think, older, more established, and maybe most importantly, wealthier listeners who are looking at Bitcoin for the first time, right? Through the ETF. And so we had a great talk, so 15 or 20 minutes. You can listen to that. I encourage you to register for that podcast. This week on CBP, Taylor and Drew, the Sugar Team Wealth Playbook, they're going to come through. We'll be sitting right here, same setup as Two Whites and a Blue, talking about real estate and Bitcoin. Taylor sent me a new piece that he put out yesterday or today, I believe, that I haven't read yet, about Bitcoin and real estate, of course. And I think a lot more people, including guys like the Carrazzas and everyone who's kind of familiar with both Bitcoin and the real estate side of things, starting to slide toward the coin and away from the real estate stuff. So that's promising. And I think you and me are in the same boat that real estate, I mean, apart from your primary residence, maybe not the thing you want to be parking a lot of your wealth, trust, and future in. So I'm looking forward to that very, very much. I don't want to speak for the NHL 94 podcast, but I believe you postponed last week. Hopefully you record this week. What's the story?
Yeah. So a few things. Number one, your interview with Taylor It's going to be 1 o'clock, I think. It's not the regular.
It's going to be at around 12. Yeah. So I'm going to try and do it on my lunch, and it won't. We're not going to stream. I don't think we may or we may not, depending on. But either way, it'll either be streamed that time, or we'll do a premiere the same way we did for Mark and I a few weeks ago at 7 o'clock, and I'll be in the chat like I was then as well, talking to you guys and chopping it up back and forth about the content. It might be easier not to stream because I think I'm going to have the article up and we'll be sharing some of the slides and whatnot like we did last time Taylor came on, which, by the way, people really like what Taylor's saying about Bitcoin and real estate, and he's got some good angles that I don't think a ton of people are taking. And it's all data supported, of course, which we love here. So looking forward to that.
No, it's good. I read the article as well. It's relatively short. I guess it's like a 5 to 10 minute read.
Yeah.
And it just really outlines how Bitcoin has been outperforming real estate. And the reality is you have to live somewhere. So, I mean, you have to buy a house or rent a place, one or the other, for the most part. And so you have to do that. I mean, beyond that, what are you going to do with your extra money if you have anything extra? Bitcoin seems like a fine place to park it, but, you know, make your own judgment call on that. And yeah, I'm going to be interviewing somebody in NHL 94 podcast. He was sick last week, so it's going to be delayed to this week. I'm also going to be in the High Hash Rate podcast. I was supposed to be on not too long ago. It has been postponed to this Wednesday, so it's going to be 11 o'clock my time recording. So it's going to be quite late for me, but anyways.
Wow.
It is late. They're West Coasters, and I'm going to be trying to chill out with them. And
is that what you're calling it? That's the PG version of what they're going to be doing? They'll be chilling out over there. I listen to High Hash Rate once in a while. They don't sound like they're baked, but I presume that they are. I mean, it's in the title, right? So
they used to, from what I understand, they used to do it, but the show, but they kind of steered away from that. I could be wrong. That's from what I understand. Boomer has been on it recently. Maybe you could give it an idea.
Yeah.
What's going on with them and the green leaf. they're the medicine people. But yeah, that's it for that. Joey, do you want me to just go to the boost or anything else you want to?
No, I think we're good. That's 10 minutes here. Let's hit the boost and let's hit the ground.
I'll chop off one of the boosts. Al Cool J at 121 Sats. And he says that I grew up on bagged milk, 1.3 liters per bag, I believe. 3 bags equals 1 big old jug.
Love it.
But nothing beats a fridge with 3 1.3 liter bags of chocolate milk taking up half the space in there.
I got 6 bags of milk in the fridge right now. I am like bulldozing them. It's funny. I think I told you guys on air in the summertime, I had like a bladder infection for the first time, a UTI. I attributed it to stress, honestly, more than anything. And I wasn't allowed to drink milk while I was on the antibiotics, basically 2 hours on either side of the pill. And you're taking 2 a day. So you're cutting off quite a bit of milk consumption. And I think it messed up my gut a little bit, honestly. And so I've been like trying since then to like straighten the ship out. But I tell you, you don't realize how sensitive your gut is. And I think how important milk is to having like quality stomach health until you're not allowed to drink it for 2 or 3 weeks. And then you realize pretty quickly, not to mention antibiotics always mess up your, your gut flora or something. Yeah. Something like that.
Yogurt's good too. I think
yogurt's good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a big yogurt guy. I have a lot of shakes, and in my shakes, usually it's like a banana, raw egg, protein powder, frozen berries, yogurt, and milk. That's like the staple 5 ingredients. So yeah, I mean, I'm a big milk guy. I never really asked you, are you a milk guy?
Not really. Even chocolate milk, I could kind of have it. No, I'm not a big milk guy. To be honest, what I drink almost primarily, like almost just exclusively, is water. It's the fucking craziest thing. It's all I drink is just water.
Hydro, homie, as the kids say.
I'm just so used to it. You know, like, if I find a hose, I'm just drawn towards it to turn it on and start drinking from it for whatever reason. Let's go on. We got Dumasm. I hope I pronounced his name right. 521 Sats. The silence cut from Fountain is very annoying to me. Keep up the very good work. CBP rocks.
Can you hear these dogs, by the way?
No.
Thank God. It's so loud in here. Okay, the fountain silence thing. What's the do you have the latest on that? You're the man on the street for the fountain sound removal.
Well, you know what?
Silence removal.
I'm listening to podcasts now, and it seems like they've removed that from the latest update. I could be wrong, but either I've got accustomed to it or they removed it, one or the other. So I don't have anything new, just aside from, you know, I've maybe just been trained to live with it. Who knows? Anyways, Mo BTC Dick, 550 Sats. How about the SEC rug pull? Are they going to use it as an excuse to deny on the basis that it can be manipulated? That is. So he sent this in just before the ETF was approved by the SEC. We all know what happened since then. The last one we got, Doug and Roop, 1,050 Sats. With over 20 years of trading experience, this gentleman has royalty sold you a pup. Corey, insert there is no risk-free yield meme here. Man, they dropped the ball with that whole thing.
Oh, big time. They didn't even address it. They didn't even talk about it. They're just back on the morning spaces like nothing happened. That's the MO for them, by the way. That seems to be the standard operating procedure over there.
Just ignore until it goes away. Punches, and somebody was saying that one of the guys was in the Telegram channel. I'm not sure if you saw that, the Peter Ansel, that
yeah,
he's a human scum,
still there.
And so apparently he was just somebody pretending to be him.
Sure.
No, that's because that's
how can you get into a chat, change your name in the chat, and not have anyone be like, hey, can you, like, I don't know, I don't want to talk about it too much because we dragged them last week, but to me, again, like, number of puzzle pieces just aren't quite fitting into the picture here a little bit. And we'll see how it goes. Good luck with your IPO.
Well, I said something on Twitter and I was reached out by a few people from Swan as a result of that.
And I did see that. I did see that. Yeah. I think you called them a human piece of shit or something on. What'd they have to say about that? You care to share?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the reality is, like, the guy was entered the Telegram channel with a different handle and then switched it to Peter Ansel. And that's how he was able to do it. So it wasn't the real Peter Ansel.
What was the nature of the Telegram chat, though? It looks to me like small. A swan. Yeah, it's a Swan Telegram chat, or is it like internal?
I thought it was No. It's just like a public Swan thing. And so he was just, it seemed like a message from Peter, the way he framed it, but it was somebody else that clearly tried to become him. Now, I have to say this, that the person that is Peter Ansel is a piece of human trash, but whoever's trying to impersonate him,
worse.
You're also trash, right? Yeah. Fuck, if you're going to troll somebody that's just higher up on a totem pole. Don't fucking troll, don't mimic somebody that has this type of baggage. Find somebody else that's doesn't have that type of fucking trash.
Good idea. Very good idea.
With that, Joey, you want to go to the Bitcoin related news?
We may as well. I mean, we usually do it this time. So why change? Why fix it if it ain't broke?
Let's keep doing what we have to
go,
do then.
Go Bills. Go Bills.
Do you want to talk about the spot Bitcoin ETF?
We may as well. What do you want to talk about? Like, you have a starting hopping off point here? I mean,
we could riff on this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say what I said on Mike's show. I think this is pretty big news, bigger than a lot of Bitcoiners are giving it credit for. And I anticipate that I'll take a bit of shit for this. But the long and short basically is that there's a few, key elements of a Bitcoin spot ETF that really make a difference for Bitcoin, not least of which is the top of the funnel. And the top of the funnel is something that we've talked about a lot on this program. One of the things we've had trouble getting over, a hurdle we've had trouble conquering over the last 2 or 3 years, even with the price ripping for part of that period, is the trust barrier. And the trust barrier shows up when the first time you hear about Bitcoin, it's from Joey and Len on the internet, with the Madex painting full of machine guns and knives ending fiat, and Len back there with the, Liz Warren, low IQ Liz photo sometimes or whatever. It's hard to convince people when that's the starting point.
I think we lost Joey. So unfortunately, it looks like we lost him. So it's too bad. So sad. Let me know if people. Yeah, it looks like we got rug for whatever reason. And I then plugged in my Ethernet cable. So I thought it was my side, but apparently it was not. Well, I'll say that rug. You know what? Something is going on in the land of YouTube, and I'm kind of confused what's going on. But anyways, the spot ETF, everybody knows this thing went live. And to me, it seemed to be rather underwhelming, the whole thing that happened after that. A lot of people were expecting a very, very large green dildo, and we never got it. We just never got it. And we got a little bit of a pump. It went to 49K, and that's about it. And then it dropped quite a bit since then. So I think that I was talking about it last week. I was saying that expect some people to be disappointed in results. And here we are. I think a lot of people are disappointed in the results. I was saying tongue in cheek, I wish the price dropped so I could buy more corn on the cheap. I didn't expect it to drop like this. My stacking goals of 2024 are what they are. Because the price has been dropping a little bit, I'm going to have a chance to get to my 2024 stacking goals even earlier, but I don't expect it to be like this. I was kind of expecting this to be choppy for a little while, not to drop a few thousand dollars. And looks like Joey's coming back online. So now we have this ETF live in the United States. And what could happen? Welcome back, Joey. We got rugged for
something. I'm pretty sure I just had a power surge over here.
I know. I think both of us got something because
what
I
was happened having, there?
Oh, we were talking about the ETF in a light that YouTube didn't like us to talk about.
Just
it.
Happened. So, the fuck was that? Okay, so, the top of the funnel thing. Did you finish that part?
No. I was just talking about the disappointment of what's transpired from this. If you want to finish up that top of the funnel moment, you could go right ahead.
The top of the funnel thing, now the first time people hear about Bitcoin won't be from you and me. It'll be from like a financial advisor that they've been working with for 20 or 30 years. I think that's big. And the other thing I said on Mike's show that I think should hit home for people is Bitcoin volatility. And you're going to start seeing this on a number of different fronts. But you know, sort of the chief issue here, the chief principle to remember is that people hate volatility, but in Bitcoin, we've been quoting a lot of stuff for a few years about, you know, how the volatility can work for you. And two of the things that we've quoted a lot of, one of them is not true anymore, unfortunately, but you can pick any 4-year period in Bitcoin. And generally, if you hold for 4 years, you're profitable. I think that might've changed to if you DCA for any 4-year period, you're in the green, which is great, but it's not as appealing. The thing that is very appealing though, is that if you were 2% Bitcoin and 98% cash USD, for any 4-year period since Bitcoin's inception, you're beating the S&P. That's a big stat. And people like that kind of stuff. And the other thing I said to Mike and his audience is like, look, man, 60-40 is wavering. Debt market doesn't have the same faith and confidence that it did years ago. I mean, we've seen like a couple of no-bid bond auctions at this point in the United States. And God only knows what debt looks like in other countries, probably way worse. I think people are going to start looking at this stuff with a different set of sort of initial core beliefs about it because of the ETF. And I was really disappointed with the price action, but I have to say, I don't think we should have been expecting a huge candle. I know we've been like joking about it with guests and whatnot, but 10% dip on something that everyone's been saying is going to be a sell the news, fine. I don't really care about that. You're starting to see now some of the inflow data. Some of the inflow data is really promising. After this, when I'm editing the audio, I'm going to watch Josh Olshowitz's video on the first few days of the ETF. I'm really looking forward to see how the flows were. I suspect they're very positive. And I realized that in real terms, $1 billion is not what it used to be, but we did get to $1 billion faster than any ETF launch in history. So I feel pretty good about that too. And, you know, don't forget, Len, GLD at launch in 2004 was like a $450, $400 per ounce gold price. Made it all the way up to, I think, almost 1800 or 1900, something like that. Something crazy, almost a 5X, foreign change X. And to see that and think that Bitcoin, you know, and that was between 2004 and 2012. To see that and think that Bitcoin is going to do it in a day, I think is wrong. But long term, you got to like this. And one other thing that I think is important that I wish I had thought about before Mike's show, but I've since kind of, you know, realized, because you think I'm thinking about the halving now, right? That's the next big thing for us. We did the ETF, now the halving is next. If there's a steady sort of like step function of inflows to the ETF, the same way there is in like the SPDR or GLD or, you know, whatever, VFV in Canada or XEQT in Canada, any of these like retail sort of index passive investing favorites, why wouldn't there also be something like this in Bitcoin, even if it's not that big? And does that thing in Bitcoin eliminate some of the downside during the, you know, red light in after a stream of three green light meme years? It may. And so does that eliminate the sort of 4-year, you know, cycle, the three-year, four-year cycle that we've been in? Does that, I'm not sure, but all this stuff together tells me that this is a great time to be buying Bitcoin if you're not already. I spent irresponsibly on the weekend for the first time in a long time, since the March 2020 crash, I'm pretty sure, I went into my line of credit to buy Bitcoin on that 9% dip. Yeah,
I went
into my line of credit to buy Bitcoin on the 10% dip. And I may live to regret that, Len. I don't know. I don't much care. But to me, looking at all this stuff together, you know, you don't get a lot of opportunities on the day of an ETF launch or this, you know, the second day after an ETF launch on a 9% drop to grab the hardest asset on the planet. People are going to learn more about this. They're going to find out that this thing is valuable. They're going to start to understand it because there's going to be management fees related to it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm happy about the ETF, disappointed with the price action a little bit, but overall happy with the ETF. What are your thoughts on it? Where do you come down?
Well, this is something which I'm not happy that it's this taken place, that they're now allowing this to be purchased by whomever in the United States, businesses and all that shit. And it's being gobbled up and centralized by a few different companies like BlackRock and not Vanguard. That's a story we'll talk about in a moment. But I don't know how we could look at this and call it a win. You know, like financial advisors are not going to provide good advice with respect to Bitcoin. They're there to pump their own bags. Whatever it is that they're going to get the most yield, the most return from whatever they're selling, that's what they're going to do. Regardless of what is Bitcoin, you're not going to fucking talk about it. They don't give a shit. And the people that are buying ETFs, you know, if somebody's buying a defense ETF, are they really analyzing the companies in it?
No.
They don't give a shit. They're looking at the returns. So the same thing with Bitcoin. So when they buy a Bitcoin ETF, they're not going to analyze what is Bitcoin, what are the fundamentals of Bitcoin. We have a halving coming up. They don't give a shit. For the most part, they're just there for fiat gains. That's it. So all we're doing is now exposing Bitcoin to the fiat world through this walled garden of the SEC. How is this a win? I can't see it. It's not, I couldn't stop it. I'm just one guy. None of us could have stopped this. The SEC could do whatever they want. They're a centralized entity. But let's call it what it is. It's not a fucking win.
Well, the thing that I wanted to say to Mike that I didn't get a chance to because the conversation never really went that way, as far as the bankers and advisors or whatever talking their own book and not giving people sort of the actual facts about Bitcoin, specifically, I think you're probably talking about like the underlying properties that make it valuable in the first place. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I gather that's what
you're correct. You are 100% correct.
Okay, so I would say the difference between Bitcoin and the defense stocks is there's like a clear delineation between those two things. The defense stocks, it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not Boeing or Raytheon or Lockheed are doing anything except making bombs, right? They have the government contract for bombs and that's what they make and they sell them by the boatload and the US is always bombing somebody and so perfect. It's a nice flywheel, easy. The thing that gives Bitcoin value is not a flywheel or a government contract. It is the underlying properties. And so it is imperative for banks at some level, maybe not at the retail level, the advisor level, but it is critical for banks at some level who are offering that ETF product to make sure that they are protecting, encouraging, and helping those underlying properties to proliferate further. Because without those properties, the ETF has no value. No value for you, for me, for anyone else. I think I said this last week. You need those properties to stay. And I expect that those companies will help to make sure that that is the case. We talked last week about one of the ETF providers doing a management fee share agreement with a few of the open source projects in the space. I don't remember which ones. Me and you both had our doubts about that. Did you see who the projects are?
There's two different things. There's one that was released last week.
Yeah.
And I forget who that was. And there was another one this week. And I do know that what they're being...
The one last week was the one we were talking about with some hesitation.
It was Bitcoin developers.
Yeah. But
specifically so, like the developers of Bitcoin.
They're not giving it specifically to developers. They're giving it to three organizations to distribute to developers. One of them is OpenSats. One of them is HRF. And I forget who the third is.
The third one is the Human Rights Foundation. Now
that's HRF. But there's so OpenSats, HRF. And then the third one, I don't know who it is. Do you know who the third one is besides
OpenSats? Bitcoin Brink.
Okay. So that's, to me, that's better than we thought it was last week. I am pro that setup. What is the new one that came out? What does that one look like?
So I thought that maybe I'm confused because I thought there was two different ones. One was specifically to Bitcoin developers from last week. And then the Bitwise, what was you're talking about, the three different open source developments. So maybe I'm incorrect. It was simply just one. and it's not going to directly to Bitcoin developers. It's going to these three different things. So Bitcoin Brink, OpenSats, and the Human Rights Foundation.
Right.
So whatever. When you follow
that's
money.
That's better than them deciding what devs to give it to, though. Like, I trust Odell and OpenSats more than I do, you know, X ETF provider, X authorized participant, whatever, to influence things in a positive way. I would guess you do too. Like, I'm not,
if I had to pick my poison, I pick certainly that one. That's the better of the two. It just, when I see fiat money coming in from companies that are so close to the central bank, I'm always going to look at it with a Spocky eye and say, what's going on here? Scopping up Spocky eyebrow. What the heck's going on? Because I don't know. Like, you could even go a little bit further. Remember Vanguard?
Yeah.
And this was, I can't believe they've done this. They decided they're not going to go ahead and offer the ETF to their clients. There may be some pressure from everybody out there to start offering it to their clients, but why wouldn't they do it? So, like, when I'm looking at this, and what are they trying to protect people from? Because, you know, they have ETFs for everything from pharma. We know what they did.
Well, you saw the rationale. He was on TV, right? The CEO, and he was saying that they don't herd people into quote unquote stable assets like Bitcoin or gold. So, I mean, that's a sort of a nod, but at the same time, they offer GLD. So, like,
you know what?
And oil, I think he also mentioned, like, you know, commodity markets are not as volatile, I guess, as Bitcoin might, but like, even still, it doesn't make sense. Like, end of the day, you have a responsibility to your shareholders and your clients to make them money. You know, you're a fiduciary, not a clutcher of pearls.
So, you could buy marijuana stocks or ETFs with them.
Yeah,
right?
Sin stocks. You could
buy Coca-Cola, and how good is that for people? You could buy even leveraged ETFs. They offer that too. But this, they're going to draw the line. And not that I want them to offer it. It's more just fuck you. We don't need you. I'm happy for them not offering. I kind of hope, like, in like somewhere inside me, I'm thinking, man, whoever made this decision, I hope it's a fucking Bitcoiner because they don't want to offer spot Bitcoin ETFs to their clients. But the reality is not. They're just fucking truly fiat maximalists, and they just don't want to offer it because they don't want to lose whatever control they have, which is fine. They have that prerogative, but like just this whole thing, and we'd even change gears slightly too. When Tuesday last week we had the SEC, they released that fucking tweet the afternoon and saying it was approved, then and shortly thereafter rescinded it. How fucking Bush League is this? You know, like the SEC.
That was a scheduled tweet.
It may have been a scheduled tweet, but let's be perfectly honest here. What is their mandate? I fucking took a look what the SEC's mandate is. And it's protecting investors as well as maintaining fair, orderly, and efficient markets. They go with this. They went ahead against their mandate when they decided to go ahead with this tweet a day early. You know, Gensler said all along, right up until the approval of the ETF, by the way, he said the industry is rife with fraud and manipulation.
Yep.
Who the fuck manipulated the market with that tweet? It wasn't you or I, Joey. It was the SEC.
He's a clown.
Right? Like,
he's a clown.
The
impartiality too, right? The soft whimper he let out on Twitter. Like, talk about cucking yourself, man. You know, like, I've never seen anything like that from a guy who should be, again, impartially, like, as you mentioned, protecting investors and ensuring orderly market function. Neither there. He should be fired. Like, any serious administration would have this guy, you know, removed and thrown out onto the street like one of these old wartime animation films. But he just gets to stay, I guess. And now, you know, you're seeing in the Ethereum world, people are trying to front run an SEC approval of an ETH ETF. And Joe Carlisari today, who is a Bitcoin guy and a lawyer and seems to be right about a lot of the stuff you said about ETFs in the past, says if you look at the three criteria that the SEC approved the Bitcoin ETF on, ETH is going to get one too. And so now, instead of just approving, so this is another question, right? And I know this is not an Ethereum show and I don't want to give any shine, but if I'm looking at this objectively, now you're going to let the market front run an Ethereum ETF approval, the same bullshit process, the same bullshit kickback for comments, the same bullshit everything for 2 years or a year or 5 years or whatever, and then give the ETF 10 years down the road. And so the people who wait for the ETF to buy get it at a higher price than the people who are willing and understand the approval process is inevitable, even if delayed. This is not orderly market function. It's front running. It's you know, cheap. It's embarrassing, honestly, is what it is. And Gensler, you know, for all the things he said, you know, in his academic days, that when he was at MIT, I believe, about the nature of Bitcoin as an asset and why it's different, he's basically either become a completely co-opted state man, or he just now suddenly feels differently about certain things than he did 5 years ago. I don't know which is true, honestly. It's pure speculation at this point. I have a guess which one is more likely, but you know, if you look at like Ethereum now, they're going to go through the exact same process, and people who waited for quote unquote safe investing options are going to get fucked to the tune of what? You know, what did Bitcoin go up between the sort of last set of comments and the ETF launch? 50, 60%? So you're going to get fucked for 50, 60% of the value? The
was when BlackRock in November
filed. Said, yeah.
So that was, if you go look at the chart, that's when Bitcoin ran up. And then,
but whatever, then like the whole
stopped running up after
the ETF. Yeah, but the point is that it basically ran from 20K or whatever it was in November, 25K to 50 almost. So you lose basically half of your purchasing power in that time if you're someone who's waiting for the quote unquote safe option, thanks to, you know, mommy and daddy at the SEC. You got crushed by that. And it's not, that to me is not fair and orderly market function. Now,
well, why would you get crushed? I don't want
to
say
you get crushed because you waited for the price to go up because you were afraid to buy the underlying asset. You wanted an ETF product, right? That's the thing.
Just like Bitcoin, what people should have done all along, now that they're offering an ETF for Bitcoin, everybody had the opportunity to buy Bitcoin.
Yes. I totally agree.
Everybody did.
I totally agree. Now I totally agree.
But creates this brand new market.
It's just extending the market. I know, but the point is that the SEC's responsibility, their actions fly in the face of what their responsibility should be. And protecting investors, the ones who need protection, the ones who feel like they want to wait for a quote unquote safe product, they're instead of rewarded for their patience, they lose half of their purchasing power in the asset in which they were interested. Now, I know you're right. They could have bought underlying, but not everyone buys underlying. That's just the way it is.
It's a casino, because if they are truly there to protect the consumer, they would never offer any leveraged anything.
Yeah. We know this. They would not offer the small cap,
even middle cap. They would just simply offer, you could buy the whole house. You could buy the ETF of the S&P 500, and that's safe investing, quote unquote safe.
Mm-hmm.
You probably won't get wrecked, but you're not going to make bank at the same time.
Yeah,
that's what if they really wanted to live by that model, that's what they fucking offer. Fuck all, mm-hmm. but just the safest of the safe investment offers.
Yeah,
but they're not. They're picking and choosing what they want to do.
Yeah,
and you know, fuck this, like, fuck the ETF, fuck the Bitcoin ETF, fuck whatever ETH ETF's coming down the pipe, fuck them all. It's, you know what, this is bringing on grifters too. And then there's something else I want to just touch on.
For sure.
You know, did you see Franklin Templeton? They changed their profile.
Laser eyes, yeah.
How fucking pathetic is that?
Didn't we talk about, I mean,
about laser eyes, how pathetic it was for individuals.
It's stupid. It's
fucking company does
it. Laser eyes are dumb. They're dumb.
I'm cool with anybody doing it. Like, I've never done it myself, but anybody wants, I'm fucking cool with it. That's your choice. But when a company does it, like a company that is,
it's like a how do you do fellow kids moment there for Franklin Templeton, right?
I was looking at it. It was so fucking cringe.
On
top of that, did you see what they're even doing? I got a tweet from Franklin Templeton too. And this is a tweet. I'm going to just pull it up. It was multi-parts. It was from their CEO, Jenny Johnson.
She claimed it was her, but I put it as my wallpaper now. It's my phone wallpaper. Shut the fuck up. No one asked. Well,
they say they're going to be development into investment strategies, including early stage Web3 venture investing. I know.
They can't help themselves.
This is the kind of
I know. And you and me have never said that these guys are good actors. What are they there for, Len?
Make money.
You got it. And, you know, I was joking with Mike last week that it's funny, people waiting for a quote unquote trusted product from BlackRock and others, the least trusted, you know, corporations, entities on the planet, maybe in the planet's history, some of the least trustworthy entities, you know, of all time ever formed. These are the ones that are quote unquote trusted by the government and trusted by a lot of retail. So I don't know. Web3, like, it's hilarious. How many times do companies need to show their cards and really demonstrate that they know just sweet fuck all about the space? Sweet fuck all. And I hesitate to even call it the space at this point, because short of Bitcoin, everything else, I mean, in our opinion, in my opinion, I think in yours too, I won't speak for you, but I'm pretty sure, is a scam, a grift. It's an rich quick scheme for somebody who spun up some token or spun up some Web3, whatever. We're doing Web3. What the fuck is Web3? Web3 is just you and your personal sort of, you know, the defensibility of your personal rights and information eroding slowly in favor of, you know, having a 3D avatar on every single website you visit. Good for you, idiot. Let me know how that goes. It's not that hard to see where this is, you know, kind of heading. And Franklin Templeton, laser eyes in the profile, Web3 in the tweets, right? Damn. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Laser eyes in the streets, Web3 in the sheets. That was, so can we say that?
I guess we can now. They, you know, so a company that had like a long history, a pedigree that you expect them to act accordingly, but they're like, they're acting like kids.
Why, you know, do like, you act, why do you expect them to act accordingly? They have like some cringe group of, you know, Patagonia vest wearing MBAs who are completely detached from reality. They have no interest in being original in any regard. These guys, all they do is take management fees. That's the whole business model. It's not like they're innovative at all. How many, you know, ETF hugging types are there at these companies? That's all they give a shit about. So, I mean, why'd you expect them to be original or like come up with some great content or ideas? You ever listen to these, like these pre-packaged statements from these CEOs? Like sometimes they'll do like Twitter shorts or they're on YouTube or whatever. They just don't get it. they just don't. I don't expect them to. And I think, again, like you and me are not the target audience for the, excuse me, Franklin Templeton laser eyes picture or the tweet storm about Web3. It's people who don't know all the stuff that's happened in the last 5 years. It's people who are brand new. Here's what we're bringing. Web3, you heard about it on your local news one time a year ago, you know, after six Bud Lights. And now we're going to tell you a bit more about it and how you can make money on it. To the normie, that's great. And it shows that really the target audience is just nowhere close to Joey and Len. It's people who just haven't been paying attention for 5 years, haven't been here through the, you know, the number of different factions that have, you know, sort of risen and fallen over the last half decade. And there'll be many more to come that I, again, one of the things I'm looking forward to, if for no other reason than entertainment, is fucking Van Eck going to weigh in on fucking drive chains now or whatever the next drive chain thing is? Like, do they have to? Are they expected to? Are we?
They may have already been doing it.
Who knows? Oh, Len, maybe.
Well, we've suggested.
Oh, no, you're right.
I know. I certainly
have. You could be right.
Something's funding this. You know? Yeah. Narratives just don't appear after being dormant for a long time and just have so much steam behind it in terms of like a lot of people. And it's like you're dealing with BSV in a way. If you go look at BSV, you get these trolls bought. It looks like these are just, you know, they're not legitimate people. These people are paid actors.
Johnny bought lately.
And that's what we're dealing with. So really what we have now is the ETF is live. We now have these fiat solutions. We're offering these Bitcoin fiat solutions. Whether you like it or not, this is the reality. And I'd love to know your thoughts on how could this be a top of the funnel moment. So I'm Joe Blow. Jane Doe, where the fuck you are? I'm buying the ETF. Now, what am I going to, like, how do I progress further? You know, I'm putting a portion of my.
I think eventually you just learn about stuff. Like,
is that a hope or a guarantee? Or like, how do you do this?
I just think I only know my own circle. I'm outing myself here as a vibes guy, as I've been criticized for on this show before. When I think about my own investing history or like people I know, maybe I just have a good circle of friends. I'm not sure. But when I invest in something, I learn more about it, whether it was Nvidia that you guys all gave me shit for or, you know, even Len, when we did the staking, when I did the staking experiment on Wealthsimple, right? Like I learned a bit about how that worked. I didn't just, you know, buy the Ethereum and stick it in there. I learned a bit about how the rewards worked and why they're so low sometimes and high other times or higher other times. When I buy something, that's what I do. I think the people who have enough spare cash and need to go to a bank to learn about an asset, my hope, my thought, my my likely outcome is that they will learn a bit about the underlying and why it holds value. Again, I think that at some level, the salespeople of these products have to push the underlying value. And that comes from censorship resistance, lack of counterparty risk, all these things, you know, fungibility, portability. We know the sort of holy writ of the Bitcoin value system, but if they don't push that, then the ETF has no value. And it's only, you know, a matter of time until there's too much, you know, paper Bitcoin, as you would say, compared to underlying. I don't think it's necessarily paper.
Until it's 100% backed one-to-one and it's legitimate. That's what it is.
How do you get there? Like Coinbase is audited. Deposit receipts are the same mechanism that Spider.
Not ETF your keys, uses. Not your coin.
It's not yours, but it's not necessarily paper either. It's got to be somewhere in the middle. Oh my goodness!
It is.
I'm trying to find the silver lining here, right? Like we got to put some sugar in this coffee.
There is none. There is this. This is just. It is an event. We can't take anything good out of this. If anything, it's more bad because now we have these fiat solutions that are being thrown into this. Now, let's go back to hypothetically, I'm Joe Blow. I'm buying into it. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with ETF. I'm happy with returns. I'm now learning a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
What do you think I'm going to do next? I'm going to guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to buy more of the ETF. Am I right? I'm sorry.
It's hard to say. I would.
So you know how many people out there? Because you
I want to know how many people who own GLD also own physical gold. I don't know
how much gold they have accessible to them in their fucking house. Bought somebody.
I mean, it's a bit of a different animal, but I understand sort of the gist of what you're saying. Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree.
So the people that are going to do this, that are buying ETF, and if they're happy, then they buy more ETF. They've been brought up in the environment of the trusting the bank, trusting the system to take care of their money, and they're going to continue to do that to the point where it's no longer you're able to get it out because there is a black swan event or a series of black swan events that prevent them from taking out the money that they do have in the bank. We've heard this before in other areas. Now, it could be a widespread phenomenon in North America. At that point, they may become Bitcoiners, but all the time, effort, and energy that they put towards this ETF that's lost, what could they do? Now they're picking up scraps in terms of a few sats here, a few sats there. That's what they could afford moving forward because their money's been wrecked. They lost all this time that they could have been. So
this is a different story, though. This is all relative. Yeah, it's relevant for sure. I don't disagree with that. I think that denominating in fiat is becoming more and more dicey by the day. Like that's obviously happening. I think to pretend that's not happening is, you know, you do so at your peril at this point.
That's another topic too. Everything we are dealing with now, Bitcoin and everything. I'm not going to strictly say Bitcoin. Everything is in United States dollars. Yeah. You may use Canadian dollars, but in reality, it all stems down to United States dollars. When you do that, you're dealing with a proof of stake system. There's no energy input to create more of it. So it makes no sense to try to figure out the value when you have it being valued in, there's no input in whatsoever. I'm not sure what is the answer here, but we should be figuring out value in terms of actual work that's been done.
I mean, that's not never by gonna, somebody. Yeah, the government is never going to do that. They're never.
They may not. But we can, and I don't know what is the answer here. I'm just venting more than anything. But the reality is, like when I look at Bitcoin, the more I look at it, I'm looking at the actual number of sats and what is the value associated with that. Not the U.S. dollar value, but what can I fucking buy with it?
Yeah.
And because there's work associated with that Bitcoin, but if there's ever a global way to figure out value, I wish it was tied to actually proof of work, because that's a better way to figure things out, because you can't create more work. You actually have to fucking do the work. Not like when you're talking about US dollars, you're just dealing with fucking something that somebody could just go to a computer and change something and add a zero and it's done. Like that's
the control, the control V tokens, whether it's US dollar or some altcoins. Yeah. There's like no value there, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a few other things I want to talk about. We only
spent half an hour on that. So,
it's the topic of the year.
It's important. I think, and then, you know, do you want to, I was going to say, do you want to, you know, take a shot at what you think the delta between the you know, Bitcoin price at launch and Bitcoin price, you know, at the halving is going to be. It's about four months. I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I honestly think that we're going to at some point get a solid like step function floor raising passive set of inflows in Bitcoin. The question is how much. That's what I'm not sure about. So I don't know. Those HODL waves would be interesting to watch. How, like, you know, you're gonna, are the HODL waves going to move now with ETF inflows? Maybe. We'll see if people are willing to sell, right? And maybe not, right? Like if you do get like a, if you do get like what looks to be a predictable step function set of inflows, then maybe people just sell a lot less because they know with even more certainty than now, you know, and presumably even less sort of, you know, less of a serrated downside edge that you, you know, can hold. If you can hold another month, you're going to get another 1.5%, 2%, 3%, right? Because the inflows are public. You can see them. And that's major, right? And you know, it's, again, like there's more data to be sort of corralled here and disseminated and metabolized by Bitcoiners. But there's a lot of things I think about. Like Mike Green, who we had on the show a couple of years ago, is famous for his work on ETFs and how they've sort of perverted price discovery because there's just no one paying attention to price. They're just investing automatically. And so you have no idea what anything is worth except NGU everywhere you look. Basically, Mag7's a great example of this. S&P, great example of this. If Bitcoin gets into the same mode, then, you know, where do we go? How does this look? I don't know. We've benefited, I think, a great deal, especially people who are just DCAing, stacking on dips, whatever, from the volatility. Does some of that benefit go away? Does it get harder to do that? I don't know. Does everyone raise their DCA knowing that every dollar you put in? It's hard for me to imagine where this goes, but my guess is that the halving, you know, the halving is going to be significant. And there's a lot of credible people, guys like Larry Lepard, Jared Mellerud, who we had on talking, you know, maybe a year ago, they wouldn't have said this, but looking at the first few days of inflows, you know, you're looking at 100K USD this year, which to me is, you know, that's high. That seems high to me. I don't know if that's going to happen, but crazier things have gone on in Bitcoin. That's for sure. It's exciting. I'm excited by it overall. I think you are too. Even if we come down on slightly different sides, it's been fun to see how this has played out, I would say.
I don't know if it's fun. It was
for the audio side. Len just made a face like he ate a 2-week-old apricot that's been sitting on the counter or something.
Well, there's two other stories we should talk about before we end the Bitcoin segment. Sure, because sure. That was a good talk about the ETF. And
it's arbitrary, fun to disagree on stuff, by the way. I enjoy
it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Arbitrary data. On Bitcoin, we talk about this often, by the way. People, I can hear people are groaning out there. Why the fuck are you talking about this shit yet again? No, but this, I got some. It's actually a little bit of an audible here. Because check it out. Because block 825080, 825080, check that out. Because someone did an upper turn message on there. And on that, it was actually pretty cool because the person that did this message was a little bit less than $3. So that's how much. What was on a note? It was SEC chairman on the brink of second ETF approval. Epic trolling. That's great. I love that.
Bitcoiner of the week, an award we don't often give anymore, but I would say that guy, whoever put that in there, like, let's have it. Good for you.
Agree. That's a good choice for Bitcoiner. That's the way arbitrary data should be used for fucking trolling like this. I love it. He paid the $3. He paid the full price to do it. And it was well worth it. So yeah, if you want to check it out, 825080. Joey, the last story I want to talk about is something which is becoming unfortunately more commonplace. And this was reported on Twitter. And the guy that reported it is Bitcoin Maxi HODL. A little bit of everything in that one.
Huh, okay.
So he tried to move some money from his bank, CommBank. And this is part of the big four banks in Australia. So this is an Aussie dude we're dealing with. So he tried to move the money from his account to a Bitcoin exchange. Obviously, he wanted to buy some Bitcoin, but he posted a screenshot that the bank was declining his move of the money, right? Because apparently what they're doing over there, at least this CommBank, they're imposing monthly limits of how much you can move to these exchanges. And right now the limit is 10,000 Australian dollars, which is about $6,700 US dollars. So it's a decent amount, but still it goes to show you that the money that you put in the bank, in this case, a large bank, is not money you could do whatever you want with. There's still somebody over there overseeing it and telling you, no, sir or madam, you can't spend it because we don't think this is the right thing you should be spending on. Who the fuck do they tell people that this is their money? They worked for it, yeah. Right? But we hear more and more about this shit much more often nowadays. It's going to happen more so even in North America. Why? Because it makes sense for them to do it. Why would they continually allow this inflow of money into Bitcoin when they could try to put stoppage on that? And, you know, you can never stop it, but at least make it more difficult to do so. I see these stories and I'm just wondering, man, we're going to be in for a very difficult time. The on-ramp into Bitcoin is going to be something which is going to be blocked by protesters and also by banks moving forward.
Getting harder and harder. Money in the bank's not yours. We talk about this all the time. One of the things that drives me nuts about some of these boomers who are talking about the ETF and self-custody, the differences in terms of difficulty is, oh, you can just put your, you can always put your keys in the bank, you know, put your private keys in your safe deposit box. You got to be stupid to do that. The banks have proven over and over again, especially when it comes to stuff like Bitcoin and even other crypto. You can't win. You cannot win. They will redefine, they will rejig, they will retune, they will resign, and they will repossess your money at every turn when it becomes convenient for them to do so, or when they're told to do so by somebody who signs their checks. So I don't understand why people are still, you know, fucking around with this stuff. We're lucky here in Canada with Bull. I know we, you know, the non-KYC thing is good, but really the better thing is, even if you use your KYC account, you can go to a post office with cash. The bank's never going to stop you from taking out cash. You can always take out cash. At least,
well,
at least for now, $1,000 at a time, they won't ask. But
they,
you know,
for now,
you, yeah. And so I would just say it's good to have that option, because while there is other services that will take cash, you know, Bitcoin Well, friend of the show, you can use them if you want, much higher mm-hmm. fees. You know, if you want to use cash, this is the only way you can do it. And banks are basically forcing you into this option now. Again, talk about how little they know. How many banks in Canada you think realize that every time they deny somebody a transfer to ShakePay or Kraken or Coinbase or whatever, or give them a hard time about fraud prevention if it's more than 2K or 3K, how many banks realize that they're pushing people into something like Bull Bitcoin, KYC free, much more difficult to track, pushing people into more of the cypherpunk ethos that was associated with Bitcoin in the first place? They don't even know. They don't even know. Again, not to use the same joke over and over again, these people celebrate being able to take a picture of a check in the dark. They're fucked. They're fucked. The only thing they have left is that control over the currency that they have in your name. And they're going to use it. I mean, at some point, Len, you're right. In terms of the cash receipts thing, they're going to use that for sure. I think I said this before on the show. I wanted to get like a bunch of money out to pay for a roof a couple of years ago. And it was a nightmare. Total nightmare.
That's your money.
It's my money, and they won't give it to you.
You fucking worked to make that money.
If I want
to
take the money out and put it in a fucking blender and drink it for YouTube likes, it's my fucking money. I can do whatever I want with it. I
100% agree.
Anything I want with it. And if I want to take it to Hammer Hands, for those of you who are in the Southern Ontario area, maybe you know what that is or was. And I want to, you know, go to Pervert's Row and fire it on stage to naked women. It's my fucking right to do so. No matter what I want to do with it. If I want to go to a fucking park and set it on fire in a tent encampment, it's my right. If I want to buy a million pizzas, it's my fucking right. And, you know, at some point you have to start asserting those rights or you will lose them. And we are becoming, I think, again, this is obviously in Australia this happened, but we're becoming slowly but surely docile enough that rights are being removed and we don't even care. We're more about convenience than we are about controlling our own destinies. And it's not something you don't want to start going down that road. Because if you look at history, Len, there's not too many times you come back from that road at all. And when you do, it's bloody and disgusting. And you just want to avoid that if you can, you know, and you do that by getting out in front of it.
And those are the people we're trusting with the ETFs.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Okay. Like, so how could you look at, read stories like this and say, yeah, those ETFs, I love that. This is a step in the right direction.
We got to convert who are buying the ETFs into Bitcoiners. That's what, and I don't want to rehash this, but we got to do that. We got to find a way. Maybe we should do CBP live in front of like the TD here in Dundas or something.
But they're not trading, right? Like, people are not dropping off their money to buy equity over there. They're doing
But they might go in and learn about it. They might go in and learn about it. I don't know.
No, the only people there are the people that are so entrenched in the system. They don't give up. They're not going to listen to a couple of guys with a Bills hat and an NHL 94 jersey. They're not going to listen to us.
But they might listen. So this is, you listen, you're talking my book here. They're not going to listen to us. Will they listen to the branch manager? I don't know. Maybe. Trust means something to these guys, right? Anyway, whatever. Is that it? Are we done?
That's it, Joey. Let's end this Bitcoin-related side.
Yeah. I hope you enjoy the ad for Lens NHL 94 podcast coming up right after this. If you're on audio. And, if you're on video, just hang in. We're not going anywhere. So we'll see you on the other side of whatever break we take.
Yeah. Take care. And remember, don't be a fucking cuck. Don't buy some Bitcoin ETFs. Don't do it.
Are you a fan of the old school NHL 94 game on the Genesis or SNES? Why not check out my show, the NHL 94 podcast, from tournaments and tactics to the people who make up this community. Check it out wherever you listen to podcasts or find it on YouTube.